the North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, delivering an unrivaled range of assets, inspect and repair services across the globe.
Hello and welcome to the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Curran. This week saw claims the wind and wave power industry could be worth £2 billion a year for Scotland. A report recommended procedures for dealing with a North Sea oil spill are improved, and thousands of people are to be offered compensation after being missold energy contracts. So at the start of the week, a report claimed Scotland could earn £2 billion a year from exporting electricity from wind and wave power. Reform Scotland said that by 2020, Scotland could be producing 50% more electricity than we need. Economist Graham Blackett, who wrote the report, says with the right government backing, the industry could create thousands of jobs and generate billions for the Scottish economy. But on the very same day, doubt was cast over that claim. The Adam Smith Institute says nearly five wind farms would have to be built every day in order to meet government targets. The report's author, Martin Livermore, spoke to Energy Week. Martin, if you want to start by telling us a bit about this new study published today.
Yes, we're very pleased to have published a study on renewable energy jointly with the Adam Smith Institute. What we've aimed to do is to look at all the renewable technologies and what they're capable of, and to come to a rational suggestion as to the way forward. Now, the first thing is that really it's only wind energy that has sufficient capacity to meet the government's ambitions. But the problem with wind energy, as well as any other renewable technologies, is that they're intermittent. They don't come all the time, and they don't necessarily produce energy at the times that you want it. So our overall conclusion is that there's a very limited scope for the use of wind energy to provide an affordable and secure energy supply for the future.
Now, I think many will find that quite worrying and perhaps quite alarming, given that so much money, you know, is being ploughed into these sort of projects.
I think they're quite right to be alarmed. The problem is, experience from other countries, particularly Denmark in the last few years, shows that as you increase your capacity for wind power, you don't use all of it. So Denmark, for example, has 20% of its generating capacity as wind. Or rather, it generates 20% of its electricity from wind. But if you look at the usage pattern, the consumption is only 10% from wind. So in other words, it's producing wind energy at the wrong time, and it's having to export its neighboring countries generally at knockdown prices, and then import more expensive energy, or indeed generate it itself from fossil fuels at other times. So what it means is that the more we invest in wind energy, it doesn't actually mean that we get rid of gas and coal-fired stations. We still need that backup, otherwise the lights are going to go out.
Now, I think obviously one of the things about the report is, you know, concerning the weather, which obviously we've been hit by quite hard last week, and it's set to come again.
Yeah.
There was that very famous picture of a wind turbine that actually caught fire. I mean, that is something you focus on in the report, isn't it, the impact of weather?
Yes, you have two situations, really. When the wind isn't blowing or isn't blowing strongly enough, then the wind turbines don't produce power. And that happens, unfortunately, sometimes for several days at a time in midwinter. So you have very cold, calm weather, just when we need most power, and wind can't supply it. The other end, of course, is that once the wind gets above a certain speed, you have to shut down the wind turbines. Otherwise, you can see what happens. They spin around too fast and burn out. So there's a window within which wind can be generating, I think you'll find in The Guardian recently they actually showed how much wind was being generated. No, sorry, not The Guardian, The Sunday Times. They showed how much wind power was being generated during the storms last week, and it wasn't very much.
What real concerns do you have about, you know, the continuing sort of focus on wind energy?
Well, I think it takes the focus away from the objective of trying to have a secure energy supply, which doesn't plunge people into fuel poverty. By subsidising technologies like wind and still having to retain backup, we're increasingly the cost of the energy supply for no real benefit. if the government was to take a step back and look at it rationally, I think for the moment they would probably say actually what they need to do is to invest in clean and efficient gas generation and new nuclear stations. Between those two, they can supply low-carbon, affordable, secure energy. Now, in 10 or 20 years' time, the situation may be different. Things may have moved on, but that's the situation at the moment.
And just finally, I understand that the report is predicting that, you know, nearly five wind turbines would have to be built every day for the next 9 years, which does seem unfeasible.
Yeah, we're not the first people to have pointed that out. All we're doing is looking at material that's already been published. And we have two things. Yes, there's the fact that sounds like a very ambitious target. The second thing is because there are an awful lot of objections to wind farms being built onshore, more and more of those turbines would be erected offshore. And there, it gets increasingly difficult. We're talking about very difficult weather conditions, which means that you have fewer days in the year when you can actually get out there and erect these turbines. And, you know, frankly, the whole thing just begins to look like a pipe dream. It's very difficult to see how that number of turbines could be installed in that time.
OK, Mr. Livermore, is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, the only other thing I'd say is that these wind turbines also have a limited life. We're talking generally about a 20-year life for a wind turbine once erected, which compares with gas or coal or nuclear, which probably has a 40-year life. So you're either going to be left with an awful lot of scrap metal around the countryside, or you're going to have to take them down at quite a high cost and erect new ones twice within the lifetime of a conventional station.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, a leading energy support partner where safety and people always come first.
Later in the week, an independent report into the North Sea oil and gas sector said procedures for dealing with an oil spill must be improved. The review was established in the wake of the Deepwater Horizon disaster in the Gulf of Mexico last year. The report, which was for the UK government, concluded Britain has a comprehensive emergency response framework and detailed procedures are in place. The industry and its regulators have been asked to consider recommendations and report back by July next year. Jake Malloy from the RMT Union spoke to Energy Week.
So first of all, if you want to start by telling us a bit about that, well, the main points of this report.
Well, the main points for us are the recommendations on workforce involvement, workforce engagement, and specifically the recommendation for more training for safety representatives. That formed a huge part of our submission to the review because we feel that that's where it's at. The people charged with taking the risks need to know what those risks are in the first instance and need better understandings of the risks and greater powers to influence day-to-day health and safety.
And is that a problem that's come directly from, you know, your members? They don't feel they've had sort of comprehensive training on that?
No, it's an issue which the industry has now acknowledged. It's been 2 or 3 years we've been pushing the issue in various forums, and only last month we got buy-in from the Step Change in Safety group, the Step Change leadership team, for the introduction of four new training courses for safety reps. But I think the recommendations in this report go further than that, and I think, as I say, it's an area that we feel is vital to ensure safe working, but also ensure, to some extent at least, the security of supply, because they're dealing with old infrastructures here, and if we want to exploit the oil and gas that's left, we need to ensure those old infrastructures are maintained.
Now, having read the report, do you feel there's anything that's lacking?
Well, like any report which makes recommendations, it's lacking, I suppose, direct statutory instruction. It's not telling the industry that it has to do anything, it's simply recommending. That said, we would hope that a responsible industry would buy into it and adopt all of the recommendations. That'll be difficult in some areas, but we would say that it's taken over a year to produce this report, and as I say, a responsible industry should be making every effort to adopt every aspect of the recommendations made here.
And with that in mind, what do you think the next steps should be?
Well, probably a joint conference to discuss the findings of the recommendations, and to hear industry's responses to the recommendations and what their views are on how they propose to adopt them, if indeed that is the case.
On Wednesday, we heard thousands of people in the north and northeast are to be offered compensation if they've been missold contracts by a leading energy provider. Scottish and Southern Energy announced it's to contact 400,000 customers who were sold energy deals by door-to-door salesmen between October 2009 and July this year. The firm has set aside £5 million to settle the claims from people who were given inaccurate information and who will be funded the money they have lost. The energy company, which owns the Scottish Hydro brand, were found guilty of unfair trading in May after signing up customers using a misleading sales script. On Friday, Aberdeen-based Wood Group made a strategic move into Latin America. Its US subsidiary Mustang has acquired a majority stake in ISI Solutions, a provider of engineering and consulting services to the oil and gas, power and pipeline industries. The deal is for initial consideration of £3.3 million. ISI has 240 staff in Mexico, Peru, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile and Colombia. And to end off the week, we heard average petrol prices have fallen to their lowest level for 9 months. The AA says the average is now £1.32 a litre. It hasn't been that low since March, and it's down just over one pence on a month ago. But diesel is up slightly at just over £1.41 a litre. And that's the Energy Week podcast. I'm Rebecca Curran.
The North Sound Energy Week with Stark Technical Services UK, global leaders in knowledge-based asset integrity management solutions.